Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We got some real bad feedback there, and it seems to have dissipated. That's very nice. Quite fantastically, actually. All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, where mercury light bulbs are the norm, as everybody has a part-time job as one, because the radiation level from Fukushima is so freaking high, which apparently is very also good for the economy, and everybody says that they feel much brighter. And my very special guest today is known only as Richard, coming from an undisclosed bushman's hut, allegedly. In some description of New Zealand mountain range with sacred, presumed to be extinct flora and fauna around him. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. That was a brilliant intro.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about who it is you are and what it is you do, and then we'll go. And then we'll get into some discussion.
Sure. Well, I run a website called wakeupkiwi.com. It's been live for a little over 2 years now, and I guess I kind of, there's a lot of websites out there with the whole truther type material. They generally have a North American or European sort of focus, and really what I didn't see there was a lot that had more of a local sort of New Zealand / Australian focus, and so really I sort of started as a bit of a, I guess, a portal to sort of collate interesting articles. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that's internationally relevant, but where I can, I just put up articles or information that's particularly relevant to New Zealand and the Pacific, I guess, really. And when I can, I sort of do a lot of research and put together articles or sort of little PDF-type publications, if I find something that is of interest, and I think other people might find it interesting too.
Well, can we start off and think about why it is you decided to do this? Was it just the fact that you'd been following this for a while and saw that there was nobody in New Zealand really doing it?
I guess I've been aware of all this sort of stuff for quite some time now, and I guess after years of looking at, you know, other people's efforts and websites and things like that, it just occurred to me that potentially people in a place like New Zealand could feel a little bit alienated because, you know, there didn't seem to be a lot out there that sort of was inclusive of a place like New Zealand, and there's obviously a lot of people here who are sort of awakening to stuff that's really going on. I thought it might help for people to feel a little less isolated if they could find something with a bit of a local flavour to it as well.
Well, I guess you're kind of doing it for the same reasons I did then.
Yeah, and I mean, I had discovered your site probably only a few months before I decided to put this together. And I think everyone, you know, there's a lot more local stuff out there now. And, I mean, you're coming at it from quite a different direction than I am because, obviously, you're more of a broadcast focus and interviewing people and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm in no way disrespecting the efforts other people are making, but you're very good at doing it the way that you do it, and it's certainly not the way, you know, it's not a natural fit for me. So, you know, the whole interviewing people stuff, but the approach I took is sort of, I guess, one that's more suited to my personality, where I can just sort of collate interesting tidbits and upload them.
Yeah. I mean, well, some of us are born to do what you do because, you know, you do what I can't, is just the going into the extraordinary detail, the reading, the patience that it takes, the analysis, I don't have that. For me, it's mostly on the fly in interviews, so it's actually your part of the media and people like you with a similar skill set that are really the basis upon which shows like mine can exist, and often the people that really get interviewed because they're the ones who do all that really hard research.
Yeah, and I guess that, you know, we're complementary in our differing approaches. And
like airplane peanuts.
Yes, just like them. But I really, you know, I'm staggered at some of the research efforts that people put into. I mean, mine's fairly lightweight by comparison. I really only have the gusto and inclination to do it if it's something that I really have an interest in. And I guess for people that do a lot more of it than I do, you know, they're obviously inspired to do it because it's not the sort of thing that you can force yourself to do if you don't really have the stamina to go through all the research and whatnot. But if I latch onto something that I find interesting, then it makes it easy.
Yeah. Oh, we're about to be killed off by a bunch of ruthless exterminatory sociopaths that have been at it for quite some time by passing progressive legislation and making us even more and more enslaved day by day. Man, that's really interesting. I'm going to start looking into them, aren't they?
Yeah, it does tend to provide one with some impetus to get off one's backside and try and help out.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate thing that was for me, wasn't it? Is okay, I can either work full time and be a slave and have creature comforts, or I can expose scumbaggery full time and basically be more or less just a hobo with an internet connection.
Yeah.
You know, I think I make the right choice. Whatever you can with whatever tools you got, you know.
Yeah. It's quite a commitment that you've made there, yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a slave job as well as doing what you do?
From time to time. I've been doing a lot of contract work and sort of entrepreneurial type stuff. So it's a bit patchy sometimes, but it's kind of a better fit for me than the old full-time grind that I did for so long. But it doesn't come without its challenges.
It doesn't? Well, what kind of challenges was full-time work putting up with for you?
What I was meeting there was with contracting and entrepreneurial type endeavors. You know, when things are good, they're great. When things are, when you had a bit of a rough patch, it's not so flash. But I guess I was in my last full-time job working for a particularly nasty multinational behemoth, and I learnt a lot and had some great experience. But I kind of always felt like I was a bit of a I wasn't the best fit there. I could pull it off, but I always felt like I was some sort of, like I shouldn't really have been there. Yeah. But, I mean, and a lot of people that get driven towards that sort of career stuff who don't know any better, you know, it's easy to live that sort of life when you don't see what you're doing. But I think that's why a lot of people like us find it pretty difficult to stomach something like that, because it doesn't sit well.
No, it's like you know how Spider-Man has the spider sense. Well, I think when you become informed about various elements of scumbaggery, you start to get a kind of scumbaggery sense, and you get into this this mode whereby you understand that you can actually feel it, you can see it, you can start to put the puzzle together about these people that I'm working for are setting my scumbaggery sense right off, you know? And you can't shake it. Once you can see it, once you can think about it, you see it everywhere. And it comes to the point where you're like, how do I even make a living if all the people that are making all the money engage in scumbaggery?
Yep.
And I think the answer is to try and make money off of exposing scumbaggery, because it's an infinite resource, all right? They produce the work for us. And people love seeing scumbaggery get exposed, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Yeah. Give the people what they want.
And I think it's becoming more and more prevalent now. Like, my father, even just listening to Ian Wishart on the radio there, and he's, you know, things that he would have never entertained thinking about a few years ago, you know, the likes of the climate change scam and all of this carry on. You know, people who a few years ago would have been completely blinkered to this sort of material and now sort of starting to go, well, hang on a second, this doesn't make sense. What's all this Agenda 21 carry on? It actually has real world relevance to them now, and it's no longer fringe. And they get a kick out of seeing this sort of stuff exposed, and they go into that fear bit for a while, and then eventually come out the other side and go, well, you know, there is something that can be done about it.
We've said on the show many times that it's very much like losing a loved one, is finding out the truth. You know, you've got all those stages. You've got those stages of denial, depression, aggression, and then finally acceptance, kind of thing.
And then there's the wanting to do something about it.
Yeah, well, I guess that part is sort of left out of the whole death in the family sort of thing, because you can't really do much about it when you're dead.
That's true. It's true. Unless you become a medium or something.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, the last thing is the last stage is acceptance, right? You accept that there's a new world order. You accept that there's a plan that is working to enslave and exterminate the population of the world. What then? And truthers often talk about this thing, oh, I want to wake people up. You can't wake people up. How did you wake up? Well, I sat down and watched 160 documentaries or something like that, radically changed my thinking. Okay, did anybody force you at gunpoint to do that? No. Well, then nobody actually woke you up. You woke you up. And that sounds like the Blake music coming in there.
Pearly shell from the ocean.
Actually, no. We're coming back from break now, aren't we? We're having a little bit of a rollover with that. Can we bring that music in the background down just a wee bit? Tad, it'll be really nice. Thank you very much. We killed it. Thank goodness we killed it. Okay. I like to kill ad breaks whenever possible, you know, with some form of joke, I guess. Can't really think of one now. Anyway, what were we talking about? Ah, yes. After you wake up, what do you do in the morning? Get out of bed. You got to work, don't you? So once you've accepted that there's a conspiracy going on, once you wake up to that and wake yourself up to it, you know, because nobody ever forces me to get out of bed. You know what forces me to get out of bed? Badly needing to go take a wiki leak. All right? That is the only thing that will really force me is myself, my own body, and my choice to go and do what absolutely needs to be done. All right? And I think that analogy, not to put the word anal in there for any particular reason, works very, very well indeed. Once you wake up, you've got to go out and get to work, okay? You've got to get to work exposing the New World Order. You've got to get to work replacing all of these poisonous products and cocktails of bioweapons and heavy metal contaminants in your house the frack out your door. You've got to get rid of all of these pharmaceutical medications and all of this disgusting fruits and vegetables that are sprayed with goodness knows what. And think about it. For a very long time before you start doing everything, because you've got a whole new life ahead of you now, right? It ain't going to be the same. You're never going to get your original life back, I assure you, because things will change around you anyway, and that original life wouldn't exist even if you wanted it regardless, but your perception of reality changes so that now only truth matters to you. And that's a really hard life. You'd be surprised how easy it is to get along through life just by lying to yourself and lying to other people. You'd be surprised the rewards that come with it. You get money, you get power, You get fancy clothes. You get great restaurateuring. I mean, it's just like what the reason people go into crime. It's because it's lucrative. All right? Telling the truth won't make you a rich man. Okay? Not for the equal amount of effort as telling the amount right amount of lies. However, the consequences to other people of lies are great. That's why you, the liar, accumulate all their wealth and ideas and power. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that. You can't lie and deceive people who only value truth. That's probably the one benefit I've found to thinking this way that I do. Richard.
Lenny.
Can I ask you, what do you think the plan is for New Zealand? The mineral resources, the geopolitical position of this country, strategic assets, this sort of thing. All those important elements which the World Bank and IMF have even listed down in leaked documents that they want to seize from countries in order to control them. Because you've done, as far as I know, a substantial amount of analysis on this globalist takeover of New Zealand. And I don't think I've actually had anybody on the show before who talks about that topic in specificity. And I'd like it if you'd indulge me.
Sure. Well, I guess what I've done in the research in this PDF, which is called International Ownership of New Zealand Banks, and it's got a very long sub-name, an analysis of the key majority shareholders of the main New Zealand and Australian banks, including a global overview and implications of the central banking / Federal Reserve banking systems. So it's very much got a banking focus. But and what you were just saying there just reminded me of an interview I heard with Evelyn from Aotea, A Wider Perspective, where someone asked her a similar question, and she was talking about all of our re-imported politicians, you know, the likes of John Key, the leaders of the Labour Party. I think there was one in the Greens and another one of the Reserve Bank, who have all sort of spent 20 years outside New Zealand working for these monstrosity United Nations machinations and globalist banks, and they sort of come back and get re-imported and slapped into these influential positions. And their agenda is no longer for New Zealand. They've been co-opted by these international interests who have either probably paid them off or threatened the hell out of them or both. And they come back here with this new mission, which is to basically strip the assets of the country for these, for their offshore masters. And I guess, you know, that's got more, not, it's not just a financial perspective, it's your mineral resources, your oil and all of gas and all of that sort of stuff. And I guess what I've done, it's got a bit more of a banking focus, but once you actually start...
Would you like to read it out?
Which part?
Well, I mean, how long's the document? It's like 20 pages, isn't it? We've got like about an hour and a half left in the show.
Oh, I don't think you want me reading the whole lot, but
it's quite substantial. I mean, like you know what's going on here, so you could actually take us through it and roll through and give us a brief summary, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, I can do that. Sure.
Okay.
Well,
I'm just bringing up my screen now with the document, so that we can even actually take a look at it there. And you might want to hang up that phone in the background.
It's all go here.
Oh, yes, indeedy, it is. All right,
Should we tell people where they can get their hands on a copy of this if they want to have a look as well.
Well, absolutely. You just go to wakeupkiwi.com. That's wakeupkiwi.com. Who owns New Zealand banks, I think, is a good Google search for you.
What? Yeah, it will come up under that, but you can also, if you click on the featured articles link in the left nav, it'll bring up a page and you can get it from there.
So if we go to wakeupkiwi.com and featured articles right here, down on the left, oh, the little picture of John Key and the Freemasons. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, that's a personal favourite.
Oh, yeah. I love it how these people just give themselves away. You know, we've got photos of him also at the New Zealand Zionist Society meetings. He's apparently like the head of the New Zealand Zionist Society, the head of New Zealand Freemasons, and the head of the country, and the trade minister, and the son. And, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And he appoints all the ministers by hand. that control everything that the country does and all the policy and everything. And he used to work for the Federal Reserve and Merrill Lynch, right? This guy is so dirty that it's oh my God. There were only three words.
The most beautiful part of that picture with the Freemason signs is if you check out the specific version of blue that is his tie. It's the Freemason blue as well, so he's just, you know, he's got it all going on. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Sorry about that, I was muted. John Key's one of three highly placed Freemasons in New Zealand, the other two being John Banks, who's John Key's coalition partner, who rubber stamps all of his policy that he purposely pushes through Parliament, and the other being Len Brown, the purveyor and the Lord Mayor of Dutch Ubershitty, the super city up here in Auckland, which has been modelled under the Agenda 21 document, according to Mels Barton, who came out in praise of voting for Len Brown because he was planning to use the Agenda 21 eco-city model. Yeah, we've got three Freemasons in the three top powerful positions in the country. There's nothing going on here. I love it. I love it. And aren't they all, you know, somehow linked to some form of scandal or BS or international foreign ownership or whatever? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go through the document, shall we?
Let's go through the document. I'm sorry, I'm ridiculous.
That's fine. So I guess the idea behind this, where it came to me from was I'd basically just been wondering who owned these banks. I had some vague, I knew they were all Australian owned, and for some reason I thought it all neatly matched up that each one of the big four Australian banks owned one of the big four New Zealand banks, and in turn somehow that there were four big American banks that then owned the four Australian banks, but of course that's not the case. It gets much more fragmented, but effectively it is the same people that own all of them at the top anyway. And so I started, originally it was just going to be like a 3 or 4 pager type thing, but as I went into it further and further, I sort of started to make more connections and draw more parallels, and it started fitting into other work that other people had done. And so before long it had sort of taken on its own momentum, and it turned into something much bigger than I ever expected it to be, but I never wanted it to be a long, drawn-out, yawny-type book. I wouldn't have had the stamina for that. That's why it's, you know, it's only a 20-page PDF with lots of pretty pictures where I could find relevant ones to put in there. So hopefully it's not going to put people off, because there's nothing worse than, you know, turning it into tragedy and hope and making people sit through lots of boring words. So I just tried to keep it kind of concise.
Well, where would you like to start? I mean, as you can see on the Skype, I've got the document open, and we're recording this. So if you'd like to just let me know where you'd like me to go with it and run through it with us.
Okay, well, I guess page 1, which is the one after the contents page probably.
Okay, yep. Let's go down past the contents. Right, international ownership of New Zealand banks. Introduction, who owns New Zealand banks?
So, yeah, basically you can... The logos on the bottom there are the four main banks in New Zealand. And there's a list on the right-hand side there. There's 22 registered banks, and that list is from the Reserve Bank because they all have to be registered with the Reserve Bank. And so we've got ANZ, which is Australia New Zealand Bank, which is owned by a similarly named parent company in Australia. We've got ASB, which is owned by the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. And you've got BNZ.
Yeah.
And that's owned by the National Bank of Australia. And then the last one, Westpac, which is owned by Westpac Banking Corporation, also of Australia. So it's the first step's fairly sort of simple. It's only after that that it starts to get a bit more interesting, shall we say. And
so there's a whole bunch of different New Zealand banks, and basically they're all owned by Australia. But those Australian banks are actually owned by other people, right? And so on and so forth down the chain, like a shell game?
It is. It very much turns into a shell game. And it actually gets quite... it's quite funny. Because if you look at the bottom of page one then, ANZ is actually partly owned by National Australia Bank, which also wholly owns Bank of New Zealand. ASB is partly owned by National Australia Bank, which also owns BNZ. BNZ is owned by National Australia Bank, which also owns part of itself by way of another company called National Nominees. And again, Westpac is partly owned by National Australia Bank, which also owns the Bank of New Zealand. So even at the first level, it's starting to get a little bit convoluted and raising of eyebrows. It gets a lot more interesting after that.
It's like Russian dolls.
Yeah. And so I guess if we then roll on to page two, I kind of figured the best, because I'm quite a visual sort of a person, I figured the best approach would be to lay this out with logos, because it's more interesting than a boring list. And it's interesting to note, I can't see your screen. Oh, there it is. On page two, where it's listing ANZ, you've got ANZ New Zealand, which is owned by ANZ, Australia New Zealand Banking Group. And the key shareholders of ANZ are HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, Citibank, Citigroup, UBS, and National Australia Bank. And those
National. So National Australia Bank, otherwise known as NAB, is that because they nab all the money off you?
Yeah. And four of those five main banks actually own large stakes in the other four New Zealand banks. So it's already pretty incestual there as well. And then there's a number of companies which appear for the first time.
And like Fidelity Investments, who have a nice pyramid with an all-seeing eye as their wonderful Freemasonic symbol and logo. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com with Richard from Wake Up New Zealand. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Now, let's continue on. We've got some banks here that are starting to be involved here in the ownership of New Zealand's national banks and Australia's national bank. And I guess it starts to kind of start climbing that chain there. So, Richard, if you could continue. You can see the screen still, can't you?
I can, sure, yep. Yeah, so this is where we sort of depart New Zealand and Australia, and it becomes very much an international sort of an affair. And you can see with these huge multinational banking entities that pop up as the owners of the Australian banks, and the sheer repetition of the of these logos, it all becomes pretty farcical pretty quickly. Because, you know, for the four big Australian banks, each one of them has a stake. Citibank has a stake in each one of them. HSBC has a stake in each one of them. JP Morgan Chase has a stake in each one of them. Fidelity is involved in most, and the same with BlackRock. And these are, Goldman Sachs is in there a couple of times. These are companies that keep coming up time and time again. So I thought, well, that's starting to form a bit of an interesting picture. And further on, at this point, I remembered about some research that some Swiss scientists had done, and I sort of was starting to see the list. We get to it later, but there's a list of the top 50 super connected companies. They basically ran about 37 million companies through a supercomputer and wound up producing this list of the top 50 companies that basically run the whole show. And I started to remember this list and watch the names starting to pop up, and I just thought, oh, wow. Because the research they did on it in itself is fascinating. But once you start to actually relate it to real-world stuff, local businesses and companies, it sort of takes on a different... It's all of a sudden becomes real. It's not just a list of companies you've never heard of before. You can actually see where their influence is starting to appear. And so from pages two to five, that's looking at these big international companies that own the four Australian banks. And then I thought, well, that's an interesting list of companies there that are owning the Australian banks. And I thought, well, why not have a look at who owns them? And from page six, that's what I started doing, basically. And so from pages 6 to 9, there's basically 20 key companies there. And I started to look at who owns the companies that own the Australian banks. And this is where it just became completely farcical, because they all own each other. There's certain key players that are... I mean, BlackRock is in virtually every single one of these 20 companies. Wellington Management, which has got nothing to do with Wellington, New Zealand, is actually an American investment entity with an Australian office. They're owning...
What page is that on?
So we're starting here from page 6. So between page 6 is... From page 6 to 9 is basically...
They're kind of a little bit jumbled up. Like, I'm looking at page 6 when you're talking about what's on page 1 kind of thing. I think the document's a little fizzled. Can you see what I'm looking at?
I can see what you're looking at, yeah.
It says,
yeah,
international ownership in New Zealand banks, but this is page 7 out of 20. Is that correct?
Yep, you're in the right place. It does... I've tried to make it... keep it simple, but it's a little bit...
I mean, I'm just, when we're running through this, I don't know specifically about what page you're talking about when you're talking about it, so I'm just kind of like all over the place, you know.
Sorry. I'm trying to not be confusing. Let's just go then to page 7. So, first of all,
and page 7 says international ownership of New Zealand banks. Yes,
that's correct. Okay. And you've got, hang on, I'm not seeing what you. I'm seeing an ASB logo there.
Yeah, and just above it is the international ownership of New Zealand banks.
Are you saying that says? Is it saying it's page 7 where you are?
Yeah, 7 of 20.
Are you looking at the Scribd version?
The Scribd version, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That website may have. I've found. I only uploaded it to Scribd yesterday, and I've found it's a little bit twitchy. I think it gets a bit confused.
Yeah. Well, see, here I am. I scroll up a page, and it says I'm on page 5 now, and that seems to be like more like. So there's a page there, yeah. A page there, a page there. Where the heck are we, bro? I'm confused. I'm as confused as Confucius.
Do you have the PDF version there? Because that,
I think that website, I might do.
I think that website is, it's got a little bit going on. I think it might have some gremlins in there.
Oh, man, I have no idea where I've got the PDF. I don't know if I've got it, actually. No, I don't think I do.
That's right. Anyway, well, I mean,
where in the hell is it? Isn't it downloadable off the site?
It is. It will take you a couple of minutes, probably, to bring it down, because it's 50 megs.
50 megs?
Yeah. Well, it's print resolution, so if people want to print it out, it looks pretty. There's nothing worse than printing out a document and having it look terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got it downloading. Well, here we are. 1, 2, 3. So where were we then? I've got it up here now.
Truck on down to page 7. It's. I mean, it really is the kind of thing that, if you're reading through it page after page, it makes sense. But here I am trying to talk about it and not confuse.
Yeah, and not to mention we've got all the radio listeners who can't actually see what we're looking at.
Yeah. So I won't spend too long on this, but basically there's 4 pages there. And so what they are attempting to show is who owns the companies that own the Australian banks. And basically, in a nutshell, what it's showing is we've got 20 companies here. Got Vanguard, Wells Fargo, BlackRock, Legal & General, Fidelity, Goldman Sachs, Macquarie, Fisher Investments, Commercia, World Asset Management, Everett's, Wellington Management, Mitsubishi, Mellon Bank of New York, Northern Trust, Deutsche Bank, and Merrill Lynch. So we've got, there's actually 22 companies there, but these are the companies that own the Australian banks. They're the major shareholders, and they buy and sell their positions, so they come and go. But the interesting thing about these 20-something companies is that when you look at who owns them, they all own each other. There's a few random ones in here that come and go, but
it's like a snake eating itself.
Yeah, virtually all of them have a stake in each other. Some of them are more prolific than others, like BlackRock and Fidelity and Wellington Management.
This means they're untouchable, because it means that if anybody ever messes with any of them, you're actually taking on the whole lot of them.
I guess you could see it that way, yeah.
Yeah, like if some unruly government, for example, wanted to kick, say, Wells Fargo out of their country, they'd have all of these other major finance houses saying different. They could implode and destroy your economy overnight if they wanted.
Yes, I guess that's possible. Mm. So it's all very incestual. And
incestuous is the word, I think.
Incestuous, okay, we'll go with that.
Although, we could call it incestual because it's both incestuous and ancestral.
Very good. Very good.
Would you like to continue?
Sure. Yeah. So it's really a visual thing, and I think when you look at start looking at the logos and the repetition of them, it kind of becomes the reality of it becomes apparent quite quickly and quite easily. So
it's the military-industrial complex, in other words. This is the financial medical complex sort of arm of the New World Order.
I guess so. And if you roll down to page 10... that's going to be a little difficult to see on your screen there. Where are you? Maybe one more. Go down one more.
One more page?
Yeah. There may be a bit of lag. You might already be on page 10 and I can't see it.
Uh-oh, my computer's frozen. Here we go. No, she's fine. She's fine. Okay. Bugger, well, you're getting hidden into a break already anyway. Frack. This is not turning out too well. Maybe we should just stick with the conversation, eh? Because this is obviously well thought out. My bad. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with Richard.